wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasoline. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now your host, Rick Moore.
Oh yeah, boys and girls. Gotta love that bluegrass. Scotty B, he knows his tunes. All right, it is time for the wake-up call. Thank you for joining in here on Sunday the 14th of January 2007. And we want to thank our fun folks like Five Guys Burgers and Fries for letting us be here today. Five Guys serves America's standard fresh and handmade from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m., and they're open until 10 on Friday and Saturday. That's Five Guys Burgers and Fries behind the fountain in the Barracks Road Shopping Center in the Hollymead Town Center and now on the Downtown Mall, all here in Charlottesville. On the web, it's fiveguys.com. That's F-I-V-E guys.com. You know, I thought so hard about writing an opening, a little opening monologue to today's program about our president's speech earlier in the week, and I decided it was just much too easy when I was watching CBS, and they let us know that the program around the president's speech was Criminal Minds, and I just couldn't say anything else to do with that. 979-0919 is our number for the day. You're going to want to write that down and start stretching out your fingers, no pulling a muscle, while you dial in and talk to the ever-popular Becky Reed. Becky, how are you today?
I'm great. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Oh, you are always welcome in the studio. And it's a busy time of year for you, isn't it?
It's a very busy time of year. The General Assembly session has just started last Wednesday. We are tracking a number of bills, which we'll talk about today, I'm sure. We're recruiting our supporters to head to Richmond on January 25th for Pro-Choice Lobby Day, hoping to make it the biggest Pro-Choice Lobby Day ever. So it's certainly a busy month and a great time to look at the General Assembly and what they're doing on issues relating to reproductive health and rights.
Now, for those of you who, for whatever reason, were not listening to WNRN all week and during the last little bit of Scotty's Bluegrass Show, Becky is the grassroots organizer from Planned Parenthood of the Blue Ridge.
Yes.
Now, why do we have to have Blue Ridge on the end of that? You know, why can't it be Planned Parenthood of Charlottesville or local Planned Parenthood or whatever?
Well, Planned Parenthood is actually, people just kind of think of Planned Parenthood as the same thing, you know, wherever you go. But it's actually about 120 separate affiliates. So our affiliate is headquartered in Roanoke, and we have a clinic here in Charlottesville and a clinic in Lynchburg and Blacksburg.
All right. And what does the grassroots organizer do?
Well, my job is to find as many people as I possibly can who care about these issues and want to get involved in a pro-choice, proactive way to support, you know, more access to contraception, better sexuality education, and get them involved in the political process and lobbying their state legislators and really changing the way our state legislature here in Virginia deals with these issues, which right now is not a very constructive way, and get the dialogue and get the policy going in a different direction, focusing on prevention of unintended pregnancies.
Can I ask, how did you get involved in all this?
Well, in college, I was in St. Louis. I was volunteering with the local Planned Parenthood there, and they were doing a pharmacy survey. They were sending volunteers out to local pharmacies to find out which ones carried emergency contraception. So I volunteered to do some of those pharmacies, and the pharmacy nearest my college campus, the pharmacist there told me that emergency contraception was an abortion, that college students didn't know how to, you know, responsibly engage in sexual activity. And that just kind of really spurred me on to a lot more activism. I wrote it up for our student paper, and that's where it all started. And here I am today, because those pharmacists are out there, although not all pharmacists would refuse to fill birth control, but those pharmacists are out there, those legislators are in our state legislatures making policy based on incorrect information. So just became kind of a mission.
All right. So we do have Becky Reed. in the studio today. She is the grassroots organizer for our local chapter of the Planned Parenthood, Planned Parenthood of the Blue Ridge. And the goal today is to talk about the activities going on in the General Assembly. Now, we may get into a couple other Becky Reed expert topics because you have been on the show in the past. So we may touch back on emergency contraception and family life education and things like that as they appear appropriate at the time. But the goal for the hour is to alert people. And it doesn't, you know what? It doesn't matter to me whether you're for or against it, because part of the purpose of the program is to let you know what's going on. And obviously Becky has her stance on things, and I would assume that everyone has their stance on things. The goal is to make sure that you have the best education to make your decision. All right, so let's start. General Assembly 2007 session just began this week. What, Wednesday?
Last Wednesday, yeah.
Wednesday. All right, so not even a week old.
All right.
I have 9 bills out there that the Planned Parenthood advocates feel the need to support or oppose.
Right, and there'll probably be, I haven't been on the legislative information system for the past few days, so there might even be a few more coming, but these are definitely bills, and for the first time in many years, there are, you know, just as many, if not more, bills we're looking to support than the bills we're looking to oppose, although there are a few very serious bills that we have opposed and taken that position on.
Is that a good thing? I mean, do you feel that shows, obviously it's a good thing, I would assume. Do you feel that shows the effort that you and your cohorts have put forth in the past to bring up more bills that you would support?
I think there are a few things going on. I think one of them is the growing presence of the pro-choice constituency in Virginia. Last year, we brought 550 people to Richmond for Pro-Choice Lobby Day. The year before that, 400. So we keep growing. We keep bringing more people to the Capitol than they see at any other point during the General Assembly session. So I think that has an effect on changing the dialogue, encouraging our legislators to focus on common sense, common ground issues like ensuring access to birth control, ensuring medically accurate sexuality education. But I think there are also a few other kind of factors at play here. I think one of them is what happened in South Dakota this past fall when the voters of South Dakota rejected their abortion ban there. I think, you know, that sent a message to legislators, you know, calm it down. You know, the majority of Americans do not want to see Roe v. Wade overturned. You know, focus on something more constructive. And really overwhelmingly, when they do polling, people will respond, you know, do you want to see our country find common ground on, you know, the abortion issue? Overwhelmingly, people say yes. So I think a lot of legislators are responding to what's happened in South Dakota, to our work that we're doing here in Virginia, and just in general, people wanting a more constructive approach to the issue of unintended pregnancies.
What does common ground mean?
Well, common ground to mean birth control, emergency contraception, sexuality education, essentially all the things that we can do to help women and families prevent unintended pregnancies, because, you know, that's a point where 90% of Americans agree, you know, and it does get a little bit more difficult once there is an unintended pregnancy and there's much more disagreement about what people's options should be at that point. But, you know, why not focus on preventing unintended pregnancies, something we can all agree on, most of us.
All right, 1110 here on the Wake Up Call. Feel free to dial us up. Ask Becky some questions. Make your comments, 979-0919. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS is the toll-free line. Becky Reed, grassroots organizer from the Planned Parenthood of the Blue Ridge. All right, let's start with some of the bills being submitted that have the most attention of the local parenthood group.
Sure. Let's start with the positive ones, because as you pointed out, it's really exciting to have so many bills to support this year. One bill that got filed twice, it's the same language, so I'm sure they'll probably just get rolled into one bill, But House Bill 1914 and House Bill 2035, both bills to add the HPV vaccine, that's a vaccine to prevent human papillomavirus, would add the HPV vaccine to the Board of Health's list of required immunizations for young women at the age of 11 entering public or private schools. And this is a really important bill because once it gets added to that list of required immunizations, there's much more financial support for families that might not be able to afford this vaccine, which is very important, prevents the strains of HPV that account for 70% cases of cervical cancer, but is very expensive. It's a series of three shots. It's $120 a shot, so a total of $360 within a six-month time period, which can be a lot of money for some families to come up with. So this is a really important bill.
You know, one of the things that I found out, found interesting, by the way, if you want to see, you can go to www.ppav.org and find the the bills link where I think you get the update on the bills that the Parenthood is supporting and those they oppose. One of the things that I found most interesting about this is that the HPV vaccination bill, you said that there are two of them that are exactly the same. One has been promoted by a Republican and one by a Democrat.
Yeah.
And while I think a lot of people would make the stereotypical gesture, which comes true in everything else because all the other supported bills have been brought up by Democrats and all the bills that you oppose at this point are by Republicans, it seems like this one should pass then because... Unless Delegate Hamilton is way out there on the edge, and I have to say that I don't really know his past, that you're probably going to get this bill to go through.
Well, I would hope it would go through not only because there's a Republican that has introduced a version of the bill, but also because this isn't about abortion. This isn't controversial. This is about prevention. It's about prevention of cancer.
That hasn't stopped people from being against it in the past.
Yeah.
You know, talking about they don't want their children to, it's almost as though for many people that giving an 11-year-old a shot means that she's having sex.
Exactly. And it's, early on when they were developing this vaccine and when the vaccine was going through the FDA processes for approval, there were some early rumblings of opposition from these very radical extremist, anti-choice groups. But it kind of quieted down because I think they realized that opposing a cancer vaccine is not good PR. Again, the majority of people would want this vaccination for their daughters and for everyone's daughters to protect them from cervical cancer.
What are the number of states or general percentage of other states that already have this? I mean, is this where Virginia's like at the lead on this, somewhere in the middle, somewhere late in the game? Is this a federal issue that's come up at all?
Well, the vaccine was just approved, I think it was late this summer, but my memory's a little fuzzy. But it was only approved recently. Of course, many other states, their legislature might have still been in session. Here in Virginia, we have an extremely short legislative session. But I don't have any data on how many other states. But I think, this is going to be a pretty common move in states to add this to the required vaccination again so they have so it can have greater access to the vaccine through public health programs.
All right, 11:14 here on the Wake Up Call with our friend Becky Reed coming in from Planned Parenthood of the Blue Ridge, where it's a busy time of year as a grassroots organizer, getting everyone to, I guess, well-taught.
Well-informed, yeah.
Well-informed because there are a variety of these positions during the assembly that are volunteer, correct? They're not paid positions.
Well, for our statewide work that we do, I work here in Charlottesville, and we've got a grassroots organizer in Richmond, but that's all we've got. So we have tapped a number of volunteers throughout the state to coordinate buses, to recruit people to come to Lobby Day. The two grassroots organizers don't make this movement happen. Volunteers make this movement happen. So there's always a place for people to get involved.
So we appreciate you coming in during your, what I would assume to be, if not the busiest time of year, certainly at the top. All right, so one of the bills that it seems to me that everyone should support, This is not just a Planned Parenthood and where do you stand on some sexual resource thoughts and beliefs, but everyone should be for the HPV vaccination bill. What else?
Another bill that I think would fall into that category everyone should support would be the Birth Control Protection Act, and that's House Bill 2221 being introduced by Delegate Kristen Amundson. And this bill, there's no funding tied to it, so people can't come back at it with, you know, we don't have that kind of money in the state budget. The bill just says that birth control is birth control, and you can't regulate it using Virginia's the section of Virginia state code that regulates abortion. And that might sound, you know, unnecessary, but legislators in Virginia and many other states, too, have passed nearly every form of restriction on access to abortion possible. I mean, they're still coming up with new ways, but they're really now moving on to enact those same kinds of restrictions, you know, biased counseling, mandatory delays, parental notification and consent. So really moving to enact those same kinds of restrictions now on birth control. So that is why we've introduced the Birth Control Protection Act, or technically why Delegate Munson has introduced it, but we worked with her, and this is a bill that we support every year it gets introduced.
Now, you say that everyone should be for this, as the like with the HPV cancer pill. But why would everyone be for this? Because it seems as though when you're talking about following the FDA-approved birth control, that's a federal issue, correct? And we are a state law-run country for the most part. So Virginia leaders, we're a little different than California leaders or New York leaders or even Alabama leaders. So we need to do it as our people want see fit.
Well,
why do we need this? Now you're telling me that I have to follow whatever the federal government does, and I'm not sure I'm up for that.
Well, I guess following that train of thought would lead us to have different different definitions of what birth control is in all 50 state codes. And that's so we inserted the term FDA-approved methods of contraception just to get that standard that everyone recognizes, everyone understands, because we have introduced the Birth Control Protection Act before. I believe it was 2 years ago. And what happened
to then?
Well, I'll tell you the story. What happened to it was some legislators who have trouble with the definition of birth control introduced an amendment to make the language more vague. The original language said birth control is such that prevents ovulation, fertilization, or implantation, and is thereby not an abortion and shall not be regulated by Virginia's state code regulating abortion. And some legislators had some issues with birth control, so they introduced an amendment that made the definition of birth control much more vague and kind of opened the door to a flexible definition of birth control. And we didn't want that to go into the state code, so the sponsor, who was also Delegate Amundson at that time, pulled the bill because we did not want a vague definition of birth control going into the state code. So we've, you know, kind of thought how we could approach this differently, decided FDA-approved means of contraception is something that makes sense to the general public. And if they see legislators meddling with that accepted standard of and definition of what birth control is, that's going to make sense to people. Hey, you know, these people trying to offer the amendments, these people voting against Birth Control Protection Act, they're extremists. They don't, you know, approve birth control. So that's going to make more sense to people. It's all about making it easier for people to understand what is happening in Richmond, because things move quickly and they deal with a lot of bills. So
easy or difficult to get this through? Because obviously, and one of the things that we'll go through as we move through all of them is you have to focus your assets,
yeah,
whether they're people or money or, you know, whatever, on certain things. The ones that you think are important to be passed, the ones that you think are most important and most likely to need opposition.
Yeah, I think this. And when we go again, pro-choice lobby is January 25th, and at that time, you know, that week, we'll look at all the bills, look at where they're at in committee, see which ones are actionable, and we'll narrow it down to three or four that will really focus on that day. And the Birth Control Protection Act could very well be one of them. Because something else I'd like to bring up is, and something else a lot of other people have, you know, written about in a lot of, you know, for a lot of different issues or for different reasons, is in the House of Delegates, they, last year, before they started session, they changed some rules. And the rules now say that a bill could be killed in a subcommittee by as little as two legislators, so a quorum of three legislators. These votes are not recorded. These meeting times are not published. This, you know, this process is happening away from the public eye. And, you know, with the House of Delegates leadership the way it is right now in Republican control, which shouldn't necessarily mean anti-choice, anti-contraception, but right now it does. A bill like this could very well get, you know, buried in a subcommittee and never see the light of day. So, but, you know, we have all these people who are coming to Richmond who can, you know, ask for more accountability. What is going to happen to this bill? It's been introduced. We want to see a vote on it. What is your position? And something else we're going to be doing this this week to draw out people's positions on this bill is we're going to be asking statewide all of our supporters to ask their delegates to sign on as a co-sponsor. So just in case this bill doesn't get to the floor of the House of Delegates, which it might not, we're going to have people's position. Yes or no, will they be a co-sponsor of this bill?
All right, 11:21 here on the Wake Up Call with Becky Reed from Planned Parenthood of the Blue Ridge. Let me let you know the markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Cloudy with a 30% chance of rain today, highs 65 to 70. Cloudy with that 30% chance of rain tonight, 50 to 55 lows. Cloudy tomorrow, highs 60 to 65. Clear in the valley and 64. Also clear in Lynchburg and 58. Some clouds in Richmond, we're at 63. And nice and clear in Charlottesville, a lovely 60.
Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
Oh, let's thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports for their support today. They are the winter outfitters in Virginia for over 30 years. Blue Ridge has footwear that's warm and stylish from Merrill and the North Face. That's Blue Ridge Mountain Sports in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville and at BRMS.com. And we want to thank listeners like Rebecca Campbell, Jill Green, and Ted Henneberry for contributing to WNRN's fund drive this past fall. It's because of people like them that you have the Wake Up Call every Sunday from 11 to 12. It's also because of program underwriters like The Hook and Tiger Fuel and Orbit and New Balance of Charlottesville. So stay tuned. Tell a friend about this show and the Bluegrass Boys on Sunday, and any other programming you enjoy on WNRN, and be sure to support us in the upcoming spring fund drive. 979-0919. Be the first caller. Get the phones ringing. That always happens. First person on the dance floor gets everybody else dancing. Becky Reed, grassroots organizer from the area, Planned Parenthood. As we talk about what's going on in the General Assembly 2007, what you may need to be concerned about or interested in. I see the phone's ringing. Toss out another one real quick. What other bill?
Let's see here. Well, let's move to the Patient Protection Act, and that's House Bill 2842. And this bill kind of relates back to a show we did earlier on emergency contraception.
As well as the story you told at the start of the show about how you got interested, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, so I was listening.
I'm just going to do a quick review of emergency contraception so people understand this bill. EC is just a larger dose of birth control when taken within 3 days after a condom breaks. If a woman has missed a birth control pill, more than two pills earlier in the month, and needs to back up her hormonal birth control method, or if unprotected intercourse happens for whatever reason, you have 3 days to get emergency contraception in order to prevent that unintended pregnancy. But it's more effective the sooner you get to it. Within 24 hours, it's up to 95% effective. But that effectiveness just decreases the further away, you know, you get. So timely access is critical. And one issue in terms of accessing emergency contraception is being refused at a pharmacy counter. Which there have been reports coming in from this area. We had a reported incident in Lovingston a few reports that haven't really been pinned down and reported to the State Board of Pharmacy coming from Nelson County, a few from around here in Charlottesville, men having trouble buying emergency contraception over the counter, which is legal. If a man is over 18, man or woman over 18 can go to the pharmacy and get emergency contraception over the counter simply by showing a government-issued ID. This bill was introduced to redress that situation. And this bill doesn't focus on requiring a pharmacist who might have individual personal beliefs against emergency contraception. It focuses on the pharmacy and making sure that that pharmacy is going to ensure access to emergency contraception without discrimination or delay. It's such an important issue given the time effectiveness dimension of emergency contraception. So,
well, how does that work? I mean, because does emergency contraception, it doesn't have to be signed off or sold or bottled by a pharmacist? One of those, you know, nice people who's wearing the white, you know, the white coat can sell it to me even though they don't have a pharmacy degree?
Well, it's over the counter now. The FDA finally approved emergency contraception over the counter this past year, although they did include a scientifically baseless age restriction. So those under the age of 18 still need to go through a clinician, have a prescription written by a nurse practitioner or a physician, which of course puts our teens at risk because that's a more vulnerable population that's going to have a more difficult time navigating that system, getting the appointment, you know, probably doing all this while they're supposed to be in school. So the Patient Protection Act ensures access at the pharmacy counter, whether you're going with a prescription or whether you're going and you're 18 and older and looking to purchase over the counter, which you now can do.
So if I, you know, I have my entrepreneurship as my personal pharmacy, but my religious beliefs are against EC, then I have to sell it anyway?
No, and
that's what this is saying?
No, that's the beautiful thing about this piece of legislation.
But the pharmacy has to sell it.
The pharmacy, right. But we're not targeting any individual pharmacist.
But I'm the person who owns it. I'm the only pharmacist there.
Okay, I see your question.
It's a solitary business.
Well, in that instance, you might choose, you probably already would choose not to even carry it. So this bill wouldn't affect
you. It's not that I work for CVS.
You know, you've got your own pharmacy.
I've got my own pharmacy. But well, so my pharmacy doesn't have to carry
right.
it if I choose.
This does not mandate stocking emergency contraception.
I see.
This just mandates that that people are given their emergency contraception. And there's a mechanism in there for reporting problems, and there's a disciplinary mechanism.
What's the difference between this and the Birth Control Protection Act? Is that because EC is not emergency contraception is not considered a birth control?
No, it is. Emergency contraception is a form of birth control, in given what it is, but not. I don't want people to misunderstand what I'm saying. We don't advocate using emergency contraception as your regular method of birth control, but it is within the class of birth control because remember, it is just a larger dose of birth control. So in terms of the FDA guidelines, it's classified as birth control. Let's see here. So these two bills are different because the Birth Control Protection Act just simply defines birth control. It's just so simple, just a definition of birth control. And the Patient Protection Act goes further to make sure that people are receiving emergency contraception at pharmacy counters, receiving EC without discrimination or delay. And one thing people can do to help give this piece of legislation a chance of passing is if you've ever been refused, if you get refused, if you know of anyone who's been refused, get them to file a report with the Virginia Board of Health, with their enforcement division. And we're still working on our statewide website, that ppav.org. And pretty soon we're going to get up on there a pharmacy refusal reporting form that will help people report and make us aware of the report also. Because otherwise, if you don't make us aware, it just kind of gets buried. And they assign an investigator and, you know, who knows what really happens. So in order to bring that kind of incidence to light, we need to know about the report. So just contact us.
Let's take our first call and push all the proper buttons here. Rachel, are you there?
Yes.
Fire away.
I wanted to make a comment about emergency contraceptives. I think it's really important when people are considering this issue to remember that also for sexual assault survivors, it's really crucial that they have access to emergency contraceptives. I know that some people would argue that they should go to the hospital for that type of treatment, but I don't think we should try and coerce people into seeking emergency room care following an assault by withholding appropriate health care. And many women don't report having been assaulted, and I think that for them to have to try and justify to a pharmacist or someone else why they need emergency contraceptives is wrong, and it's an additional layer of trauma following an assault.
Hey, thanks so much for the call.
Sure.
Good point on emergency contraception there.
Yeah, that's a really good point, that actually during the approval process for over-the-counter access, people, opponents of access to emergency contraception continue to bring in, saying, you know, we don't want, you know, survivors of sexual assault to only get EC and not get other, you know, medical attention and treatment. And that's certainly true. You know, also at Planned Parenthood, we would want for them to have all the medical care and treatment. But to tie, you know, as the caller Rachel brought up, to tie that to emergency contraception and require someone to go through, you know, certain steps that they might not be ready for and withhold emergency contraception, it's just extremely unethical and insensitive after someone's been through a trauma like sexual assault. So,
11:32 here with Becky Reed from Planned Parenthood of the Blue Ridge. What do you think the opportunities are of getting that bill passed?
Well, again, like the Birth Control Protection Act, could get buried in subcommittee. But if, you know, that's going to be one of our priorities on lobby day, which I'm not, you know, we won't decide until that week, depending upon what bill is actionable. You know, we'll see where it's at. But, you know, part of introducing a bill isn't always that we think it's going to get passed, especially the way the legislature is right now. Sometimes it can serve the purpose of starting a dialogue, changing the dialogue on this issue. You know, as I said in the past, we always saw bill charts that were just overwhelmingly populated with, you know, anti-contraception bills, bills that would inject bias into our state family life education guidelines, which cover sexuality education. And it's such a positive thing to see the dialogue start to change, seeing more proactive prevention-oriented bills.
All right, 11:33 here on the wake-up call. Feel free to dial us up. Join Rachel in being part of today's conversation. 979-0919. You can ask Becky a question or make your comment. 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Maybe you're listening on the Richmond or Lexington line or Harrisonburg. Hey, the Lynchburg. Dial us up on that toll-free number, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. All right, so we've covered the majority of the bills that you would support. I really want to get into a couple of these that the Planned Parenthood group has opposition to. Let's start at the one that's made the most news, which HB 2124 by Delegate Marshall, who seems to always have something that the Planned Parenthood group is contradicting. It's been called the trigger bill.
Right. Delegate Marshall has introduced a what we call a trigger bill, an abortion ban. And his bill says that if and when Roe v. Wade is overturned by the U.S. Supreme Court, the Virginia law of June 30th, 1970 would be reinstated. So we'd be going back to our pre-Roe abortion statute, which criminalizes abortion with a penalty of 1 to 10 years in prison for anyone providing an abortion. And there's also a clause in there which would criminalize providing information about abortion with a misdemeanor. I mean, this is going all the way back to the Comstock laws, you know, in the 19th century, which criminalized distributing information about contraception. So this is really a huge step back. It's totally out of touch with the mainstream. Again, the majority of Americans don't want to see abortion criminalized. They want a more constructive approach to the issue of unintended pregnancies, and that means prevention. So,
but, you know, Delegate Marshall obviously has his own personal beliefs, but he's obviously representing at least a fair chunk of people who agree with him. I mean, the Marshall-Newman Act, for those of you who forget the proper name of it, which was what we voted on in November about making homosexual marriages, I guess two people of the same sex could not be married, and it had some other aspects to it as well, but that seemed to be what everyone focused on. he represents whatever size, whether you think it's you know, a good number, a small number, represents a strongly heard number of people in this state.
Well, I think I've got a theory. My theory is that Delegate Marshall has really kind of pulled out all the stops. You know, there are a few other bills on here from him that we'll talk about because he might know it might be his last year in his seat. The entire state legislature, all 100 delegates, all 40 senators are up for re-election this fall. And last time he was up for re-election in 2005, he was challenged, and he did not hold on to his seat by very much. So I think he's really kind of throwing all of his legislation out on the table this year, knowing that it could be his last year holding his seat. And the other point to be made here is that there is a very vocal, very dedicated, committed faction in Virginia that supports legislation like this, but they're very small. They're so very small. You know, in a phrase we always kind of hear is a silent pro-choice majority, and that's absolutely true. You know, at least two-thirds of the public, pretty much anywhere you go in the United States, supports legal access to abortion, and then even beyond that, upwards of 80-90% of people support access to contraception, medically accurate, comprehensive sexuality education. So, you know, the issue here is visibility. You know, who do we see more? Who do we hear about more? Who is being more effective in the Capitol? And right now, it might be that extremist anti-choice faction of Virginia politicians, of advocacy groups.
How do you fight that? I mean, I recognize that you're going to have lobby day, and we'll toss out some information on that before we close up for the hour. But how do you get other people to recognize that they can't just answer the phone poll or the, you know, the paper survey, that they have to actually get up and go, look, this guy's talking about this, and you know what? I don't want that.
Yeah. Well, it's a complicated process, and bills move quickly down there. You know, we live in Charlottesville, they're in Richmond. Yeah, it's only an hour away, but, you know, a lot of us have jobs, very demanding jobs, families, friends, other, you know, activities and obligations, and it's hard to follow it. It's hard to really engage in that process unless you are very passionate about an issue. You know, and that's kind of how I got involved. You know, I had that experience, you know, talking to a pharmacist that would deny a woman access to emergency contraception, and it really motivated me. So I think everyone kind of has that click at some point. Something happens that motivates them. You know, they learn about some of these bills. You know, often when I speak to groups or, you know, talk to people about the bills that have been introduced in Virginia recently, you know, threats to contraception, just plain old contraception, closing down clinics that provide abortion. People are shocked. They did not know this kind of thing was happening. So I think the answer is education, you know, letting your neighbor know why you're going to lobby day and will you come with me? Or have you heard about this bill that's being introduced? It's outrageous. The answer really is awareness and then action. Action needs to follow awareness. And Pro-Choice Lobby Day is an amazing day. We bring, you know, 550 people to the Capitol last year, hopefully more this year. But it really is a year-round, all-the-time process. We have such a short legislative session. Our legislators are only down there for 45 days this year, but then they're back in our home districts throughout the rest of the year. And that's also time to lobby, time to educate your legislator and get involved in the process. So, yeah, awareness and then action. And we gotta be just as dedicated as that small faction, because they're small, but they are vocal and they are visible.
And the trigger bill, and I keep referring to that it that way because that's, I think, the first way I read about it. But the abortion ban, which would, if Roe v. Wade is overturned, takes Virginia back to the laws that it had in 1970. You're talking about the prison time, not just for those who perform the abortion, but also punishment against those who recommend an abortion.
Yeah, a misdemeanor.
I guess you would lose your job under that. I mean, not that you necessarily recommend.
I
guess you know, not that you're over there going, come over here and have an abortion, but I suppose it's one of the options that
we provide information on. Yeah,
you give information on.
Yeah.
So while you may not lose your job would certainly take a huge change.
Yeah.
Because of what the state allows you to do.
Exactly. We would not you know, be able to direct people to, say, another state, you know, D.C., where abortion would probably still remain legal if and when Roe v. Wade were overturned. You know, and another question you asked earlier about how do we compare to other states. 15 other states have a trigger law on the books.
Already on the books. Yes. Have already been passed.
Yes, exactly. And, you know, Virginia does not need to be the 16th state. It's a shameful law. Criminalizing abortion does not make it go away. People still experience unintended pregnancies. And the answer, again, it comes back to prevention. And, you know, what's a constructive, you know, approach to this issue? And it's prevention, access to birth control, family planning, medically accurate, comprehensive sexuality education.
All right, 11:41 here in the Wake Up Call with Becky Reed, grassroots organizer from Planned Parenthood of the Blue Ridge. Dial us up, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. As we talk about sort of General Assembly 2007 and some of the bills on the list.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
Oh, this week, machines may have made manufacturing quicker and easier, but for some locals, faster isn't better. From basket weaving to building, handwriting to hammering hot steel, 19th century work style is the best thing. The Fearless Consumer looks into dumpster issues, and Mike Shore gets on the interview hot seat to talk about leading the area tourism center. The Hook, reminding you that The Hook also makes excellent pinatas once done reading. Let's thank Blue Ridge Graphics for their support today. They're at Mead Avenue and East High Street here in Charlottesville, serving the area with custom t-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. And not that you would, but don't go anywhere, because at noon, George Bell will be here for Les Temps Purdue. It's the best of 80s and 90s alternative. No Milli Vanilli, no Janet Jackson, no Styx. But he will play Oasis, Lou Reed, and Sugar Cubes. And he likes requests. Les Temps Purdue, brought to you in part by Plan 9 Music, only on WNRN. All right. Back to Becky. I want to keep talking about the trigger bill for a moment. And then, you know, you mentioned Delegate Marshall sort of going possibly out with a bang. Of the four bills listed here that Planned Parenthood opposes, three of them are his.
Yeah.
Is this the number one concern of the organization?
Well,
and I realize that for all the things that we've talked about, the current status is still, you know, sort of out there. Everything's still in committee pending, and it may change. But what's your take on this? I mean, you're our expert for the day. You've been in this for a long time.
Well, generally, the way these bills move is they get introduced in the House of Delegates. As a rule, the House of Delegates tends to be more extreme than the Senate, which is more moderated. So these bills are introduced in the House of Delegates, many of them by Delegate Marshall of Loudoun County. And they pass easily in the House committees, whichever committee they're assigned to. And let's see here, this bill, this trigger bill, would probably go to courts of justice because there is a criminalization angle aspect to the bill. So it will most likely pass easily in that committee, and then it will also pass easily in the House of Delegates, probably by a two-thirds vote, which right there is just, you know, paints that picture of how out of touch a lot of our legislators are with the American public. Because remember earlier, two-thirds of the American public oppose overturning Roe v. Wade, criminalizing abortion. And yet two-thirds of our House of Delegate legislators would vote to support such a bill that would do just that, criminalize abortion. So it will pass the House of Delegates most likely, and then it would move to the Senate, where it would be referred to the Senate Education and Health Committee, which regularly hears our legislation that we're working on and would defeat this bill by a margin of 9-6, maybe 8-7. So it's always a close vote, but it's a fairly reliable vote. But a concern coming up. Again, all of these legislators are up for re-election. Any changes in the composition of that committee could mean a whole new ball game. You know, up until this point, you know, we can pretty much rely, you know, we always back it up with lobbying and communications to these legislators, but these bills will most likely be defeated in the Senate Education and Health Committee. But once that committee changes, again, whole new ball game, it'll get out to the Senate floor where it, you know, it'd probably be a pretty close vote, but, you know, it could pass there. And then from there it would go to the governor's desk for a signature, an amendment, or a veto. And Governor Tim Kaine, you know, made a lot of different statements about his positions on access to abortion, on emergency contraception, on the campaign trail. So I don't want to hazard a guess as to what he
would
do.
And he hasn't really been forced to deal with the issue yet.
Right, yeah. So I don't want to...
You don't have a precedent.
Yeah, I don't want to make any predictions, and I don't think we should ever, you know, count those eggs. I think we need to do our work lobbying the Senate Education and Health Committee, lobbying Governor Tim Kaine about what he would do if put in the position to consider making a bill like this law in Virginia. So just again, a call to everyone to get involved, go to our website, ppav.org, look at the bill chart. There are lots of great tools on there to help you find your legislator and then to lobby your legislator. We've got the Planned Parenthood Action Network that you can sign up for, get email updates about these bills. And how to lobby your legislator. And there's a little take action button. You just click and it sends a message to your legislator. Very easy. But, you know, just getting involved in this issue as much as you are able to.
Let's go through a couple of the other, Delegate Marshall bills, because I felt like that one was, I don't know, it seemed to be top of the list, both in terms of, notoriety through the media, as well as possibility of passing. Just my personal viewpoint on that, whether it's true or not. But he's got two others in here, one of which seems so far out. And not that it's, you know, it's all, they're always worded. Doesn't matter whether you're for or against it, whether you're pro-life, pro-choice, those are the syntax, the word choice is, how can you be against that? How can you not be for life? How can you not be for choice until you find the definition that goes behind it? So the phrasing that he uses for this constitutional right to enjoyment of life for embryos, well, okay, but talk about that one for a minute, because that really seems like narrowing the window.
Yeah, he. So this is a bill that was actually also introduced previously by Delegate Cole, and back again from Delegate Marshall, constitutional right to enjoyment of life for embryos. And what this bill does, and it goes on to state, from the moment of fertilization. And if people are familiar with birth control, how it works with pregnancy and the definition of pregnancy, in order to establish a pregnancy, a fertilized egg needs to implant in the uterine lining. 50% of fertilized eggs fail to implant of their own accord. It's a, you know, one of those process steps in the process that needs to happen. And so a bill like this, if it were made law, would then make birth control, you know, an infringement on the right of that embryo to enjoy life. So essentially it's a bill that would make birth control illegal. And it's a very outrageous bill. Again, one of those bills that shocks people and can motivate them to get involved.
But it's the syntax choice for me. I mean, it's the word usage where you almost seem, and I can't speak for Delegate Marshall, but it almost seems like you are trying to trick people with your word choice. Because instead of saying, I don't think we should have, you know, I just don't think that we should have birth control because it's wrong. He's attacking it from the other side and
right.
trying to, it almost seems like he's, whatever your belief in birth control or abortion or Delegate Marshall is, it seems like he's trying to slide this one under the door.
Right, because he isn't just coming out and saying, you know, make birth control illegal. He's doing it in a way that, unfortunately, because of most people's lack of, you know, information and knowledge about their own bodies and the biological processes behind pregnancy and birth control, might not immediately understand what this bill means and how it relates to access to birth control. So he is playing on our ignorance of how our bodies work, how pregnancy works, how birth control works. But, you know, again, part of our challenge here is to get this information out to people, to let them know that this bill is attacking birth control, which, again, is something that around 90% of people support access to birth control. Birth control is basic health care for women. 85% of women use birth control at some point in their lifetime. You know, birth control is really central to our society. So this is a really radical bill that people need to know about.
Whether you believe that or not, I mean, you can be one of the, you know, whatever your religious belief, you can be one of the 15% who's not using birth control. But gosh, it just seems, you know, I'm just a firm believer in step up and say what you mean. Don't be trying to slide things past people who, you know, are reading the headline or reading the first paragraph and not reading the rest of it.
Yeah.
Oh, let's see. We got a call here. Oh, put your headphones on. Tommy.
Hey, Rick.
Hey, man.
Hey, I guess this question will be for Becky, and it might be way off base, but do you ever think that we would see any legislator, anybody, bring legislation forward to control population growth? And would that even apply to Planned Parenthood, if you will? And I mean, what I'm speaking to you, like, I think it's in China or somewhere they have the one family, one child law, or do you ever think we would see something like that here?
I like that question.
I can't speak to whether or not someone would introduce that. I can more speak to Planned Parenthood's approach to that issue. And it's really, I think when you start talking about a state, kind of a, you know, a bigger picture of population control and linking that to reproductive health and rights, that's not quite the right connection,
right,
that we're looking for at Planned Parenthood. Because this is about individual families being able to plan pregnancies, plan families. And when you start talking about, you know, a bigger picture in population control, then you get into issues of, well, who is allowed to reproduce? You know, and then there, you know, unfortunately in this country, we do have a shameful past of
free will, free choice.
Well, in this country, we have a shameful past of some projects that sought to suppress reproduction of certain populations. And that's not something that Planned Parenthood advocates. You know, we don't bring it to that population level, because like I said, that does bring in those issues of then who is allowed to reproduce. We think that both preventative health care in the form of family planning, birth control, gynecological exams should be available to all people regardless of their ability to pay, as well as support for people who are carrying a pregnancy that they're going to carry to term and become a parent, support for those people. So really supporting all options, supporting all families and their choice about how they're going to have a healthy family. So I hope that answers the question.
Hey, Tommy, thanks, man.
I'm just curious if there would be, you know, more political suicide for anybody to bring up such an idea. But
I think so.
Yeah, and I guess where I was really going is, you know, looking at some folks that, you know, obviously my grandmother had 9 children, but, you know, look at today with families here in the 21st century having 6 and 7 children, And other folks that don't have any, and, you know, instead of going to adoption or whatever, they do other things, the embryos or whatever. I just find it odd that, I don't know if it's a money thing or whatever, that some families choose to do large families and others, you know, just kind of might be a bizarre question, but just curious to know.
Well, and Planned Parenthood supports that choice for, you know, a mother, a father, a couple, a mother and a mother, a father and a father, to make that decision about how many children they want, how big a family they want, how small a family they want, if they don't want any children. So those are all choices that Planned Parenthood supports. And it's interesting when, you know, that Rick said, you know, what about free will, you know, and kind of using that in response to, you know, for example, China's one-child policy. And it's just so interesting how that rhetoric gets used, you know, and applied to other issues, but people can't bring it back to this issue of reproductive rights and choice. And it was just mind-blowing. I was down at the General Assembly last year, and there was an anti-choice legislator, I can't remember which one, but one who's, you know, a regular opponent of ours, testifying for a bill related to gun rights. And the rhetoric he was invoking, I mean, he could have been talking about access to contraception, access to abortion. You know, he was talking about privacy, you know, our rights, free choice, and it was just, you know, amazing how he could use that language, but then, you know, have such anti-choice, anti-contraception positions when you bring it to a different issue. So just an interesting thing.
All right. Well, thanks, Becky. Thank you, Rick.
Bye, Tommy.
Bye.
All right. 11:56 here on the wake-up call. If you want to be the last person to dial in today, feel for it. 979-0919. I do want to tell you that this is WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetbriar Amherst Lynchburg. And let's take a moment and thank 45Fix for their support today. 45Fix.com. If you have a home improvement project, there's another way to find a contractor. It's 45Fix.com. From remodeling to repair projects, immediate no obligation estimates are available anytime. That's the number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. All right, Becky, got a few minutes left with Becky Reed from Planned Parenthood of the Blue Ridge. Just so we make sure to get it out there, Lobby Day.
Yeah. Lobby Day is Thursday, January 25th in Richmond. I work for, again, Planned Parenthood of the Blue Ridge, which is the western half of the state, so I'm coordinating buses from Lynchburg, Blacksburg, Roanoke, Lexington. We'll make a stop in Lovingston for the Nelson County folks.
No, you got nothing to do.
Yeah. real easygoing month here. A bus leaving from Harrisonburg. We're going to do a stop in Stanton, Fishersville area, swing through Charlottesville, and one last stop in Zion Crossroads. So really trying to make the buses as accessible as possible. And to sign up for Pro-Choice Lobby Day, again, you just go to our website, www.ppav, as in Planned Parenthood Advocates of Virginia.org. And all the information's on there, the bus schedules, you can buy your ticket. It's $10, $5 for a student. We've also have generous donors who've made it possible for us to subsidize, give anyone a free ticket who requests one. So please come with us, invite a friend. It's a really powerful day, and you really get to see the process, learn about the process, you know, again, in a way that's going to motivate you if you're there for Pro-Choice Lobby Day.
All right, let's take this last call. From Bev. Hey, Bev.
Hi, Bev. Yeah, hello. I know that the show is ending. I just wanted to say how much I appreciated Becky's work as a powerful, articulate lobbyist for something that's very, very close to my heart and my daughters and my mothers and my grandmothers. Just a thank you to Becky and all the work that she's doing.
Thank you, Bev.
All right. I want to go back to the Lobby Day for a minute. What's your goal? You've got all these buses at all these. Oh, my God, you must have listed a dozen different starting or stopping points.
Well, last year we brought, from the whole state, we brought 550 people. So looking to match that and surpass it. It's kind of getting to a point, though, where it's kind of a beast of a day, especially with certain areas of the Capitol under construction. We were just clogging the hallways last year, which certainly was kind of unavoidable for legislators. You know, they couldn't help but notice how many people we had there. So.
Does that make it a bad thing because you're sort of in their way and you're like, yeah, it'd be for these people if they just move?
No, it's usually crowded down there. On any given day, a number of groups or constituencies are probably having a lobby day. But what it does do is it sends a very clear message that we are a growing movement. We are a vital movement. We have young people, old people with us, people from all around the state. So, you know, I think that's the message. And I think, you know, again, I said before, I think we are having an effect on the dialogue. Again, seeing so many of these bills supporting prevention and changing the dialogue. So.
All right. Well, Becky, I hope you'll come back in the spring or summer. We'll talk about exactly what did happen. And next up on the agenda.
Yep. It sounds great. Thank you so much for having me here.
I appreciate you coming in, especially during a beautiful Sunday during your busiest time of year. All right. That was Becky Reed from Planned Parenthood of the Blue Ridge, ppav.org, if you want to check on things, bills, or sign up for Lobby Day. I don't have a show yet for next week, so email me with a topic and a guest, abstractme@aol.com. Here comes Les Temps.
This has been in your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. And by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane, Exxon gasolines, and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of the management, staff, or board of WNRN. You can contact Rick at abstractme@AOL.com or at WNRN.RLC.net. The wake-up call is produced by Catherine Greiner. Tune in again next Sunday morning at 11 for the wake-up call, only on WNRN.